Hello and welcome to My Camino, the podcast. I'm Dan Mullins. Can I begin by thanking you again for your incredible support? I'm getting messages from pilgrims all around the world and I love to hear from them. Their enthusiasm, our enthusiasm, is infectious. I smile for hours at the thought of someone on the Camino or somewhere around the world listening to the podcast, fanning the flames of friendship, care and love. The Camino de Santiago is a series of pilgrimages across Europe or the world, culminating at Santiago de Compostela in northwest Spain. Pilgrims walk to visit the remains of Christ's apostle St. James, interred in the majestic cathedral in Santiago's Obradoro Square. This year, more than 300,000 pilgrims will collect to Compostela, a record of their achievement. Pilgrims walk from Rome, from the Netherlands, from the UK, from Poland, from Portugal. The majority, though, begin their pilgrimage in the French hamlet of Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port on the eastern side of the Pyrenees. And the Camino is an ancient path. That path can offer so much to those who walk. The chance for renewal, for space and time, for the chance to slow down and escape the rat race for a few weeks, to meet people from all around the world, to celebrate life, to mend. We all need fixing. Was the American singer-songwriter Leonard Cohen who said, "There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in." Well, my guest this week is Bradley Chermside. He's a British pilgrim whose first Camino changed his life. He returned to the UK a different man and decided to put pen to paper. The book is called The Only Way is West, and it's out now. The subtitle is A Once-in-a-Lifetime Adventure Walking 500 Miles on Spain's Camino de Santiago. It's brilliant. I absolutely loved it. Brad's on the line from just off the Mediterranean. Welcome, pilgrim.
Thank you very much. I was captivated by that intro, Dan. Absolutely beautiful. Carry on. Tell me more.
Now, look, before we get to the book, and I won't give away too much, because it would ruin it for my listeners, your potential readers, but just let's begin by a simple question. Tell us how and when the Camino entered your life.
Okay, so it was for the first time I kind of met with a friend of mine coincidentally on the London Underground, a friend at that time that I hadn't seen for 3 years, and I'd got onto the wrong train. And I darted off the train. It was a London Underground train. Darted off the train to get, obviously, the train back the other way. And as I did, I heard someone call my name. And it was someone that had been on that train. And it turned out to be my old roommate from university, a German guy called Julian. And we had a good chat. And he told me all about the Camino. And he said, "Oh, you'd love it. You should do this." And, yeah, I mean, he had me at adventure, you know. I love an adventure. And I was just like I was captivated by your intro, I was captivated by what he told me about it. And sooner rather than later, I was booking my ticket and packing my bags to go.
The book is 260 pages following your first Camino from St. Jean to Santiago. It's a funny read. You laugh out loud. It makes you cry in parts. There's suspense and it's a terrific sub-story as well. And then there's the personal journey, which I think in many ways is the greatest aspect of the book. And I read, Brad, with a highlighter in my hand. It's a habit from being a radio producer. And right. I just want to go through, if I may then, a handful of observations you make in the book. Again, I won't give away any of the plot or the outcome, but some of the things I highlighted provide, I think, a snapshot of your journey, your Camino in Spain, and in many ways in life as well. Now, you'd only been walking for a day or so, and you got to the top of the Pyrenees, and you wrote this. And if my listeners are wondering how the book is written and what style it's written in, this gives you a perfect example. You say this: at sundown, Back out in the great wide open, I trudged up to another church where I was dazzled by breathtaking views stretching to the French border 70 kilometres back. Gazing out at the smooth, arching contours of the Pyrenees aglow in the pitchy embers of sunset, at the meadows of sunflowers swaying down below, I could beat my chest and proudly say I walked the lot. They say it's better to celebrate how far you've come rather than worry about how far you've still got to go. So even though you'd only really just begun your Camino, you realised or sensed something very special was happening, didn't you?
I felt something special. It just gives me goosebumps just you reading that out to me and remembering that moment, because I sensed something special was happening. I think the moment I started trudging up the Pyrenees from Saint-Jean-Pierre-de-Port on the first day, I mean, there's just something so magical about it. And without wanting to sound cliche or cheesy, an escape to nature and the high energy, the high vibration, and just disconnecting from devices and technology, it instantly turns that on. And the longer you keep that on, the longer you fill up with that pure energy. And I think that was probably the third day that you're mentioning there, in the place called Cesar Menor, which is just after Pamplona. I remember looking at that moment, just going up to that church and just looking back and thinking, this is the best thing I've ever done in my life. And I think from that moment on, I was addicted to the Camino and always will be, to be honest with you. I'm always thinking, when can I get back there? When's the next Camino?
In a message book in Los Arcos, you wrote, I believe life is about learning to build up enough love and power inside yourself so you have enough love to give to others. And in your book, you wrote, slow dancing daily with the elements, walking for hours on end, something I'd never done before, amplified those positive physical and mental effects. It was like a slow burning, more fulfilling happiness. Was that a realization at the time, Brad? Or was that something, mm-hmm. a reflection that you wrote when you got home? This, it was like a slow burning, more fulfilling happiness.
I think it was definitely something that I realised at the time. And then when you get home and those effects of your Camino and your pilgrimage start to dissipate, and that high energy that you feel on the Camino, life kind of can, if you allow it to, it can slowly drain that high energy and high vibration out of you. And I think when that happens, you look back to that moment and you think, okay, what did I do in that moment that made me feel good, and what do I need to do again? So it was definitely, you know, I just remember thinking to myself, I haven't had my mobile phone switched on for, I think I was probably 10 days into it, more or less, at that point. And just how good it feels not to have that. It's like an annoying little child trying to get your attention all the time in your mobile phone. I'm not saying that children are annoying, don't get me wrong, but I used to be a school teacher and sometimes you had your challenges. So by the way, I'm not a parent, but I can't wait to be a parent. But anyway, it's definitely something I realised at the time. And those little changes that you make, those subtle little changes that you make to your daily routines, but the powerful effects that they have. And one of those is not having your mobile phone with you. I mean, I had a digital camera because I just made sure that I didn't want my mobile switched on at any moment, because we are tempted to go for that. Because, you know, every time we check our phone, we get a little shot of dopamine, which is, you know, is quite addictive, though we don't even know about it. And that's why, you know, phone designers design them the way they do, so we keep going back to them. And if you turn it off and put it at the bottom of your bag, and that temptation is gone away, you do listen to to the birds, to the trees, to the noises. You become part of your surroundings, and that is the slow burning happiness, the being in the moment, and it's invaluable.
Yeah, we can hear birdsong listening to you now. So where are you exactly?
Well, I've tried to go to a place where it would be quiet. I'm on the road, as I told you before we started this interview, for my job. I'm just in my hotel, but I'm surrounded by trees and lemon trees, basically. I'm in Andalusia.
Andalusia. Fantastic.
Southern Spain. Mojácar, right on the coast.
As your Camino progressed, you found yourself singing the Genesis song Afterglow. And the lyrics say, like the dust that settles all around me, I must find a new home. The ways and holes that used to give me shelter are all as one to me now. But I would search everywhere just to hear your call and walk upon stranger roads than this one in a world I used to know before. I miss you more. And you wrote, all that I believed before was now being challenged and turned upside down. And in the book you said, it struck me how the strange road I'd walked upon wasn't actually where I was right now. It was my meaningless pre-Camino life and every shallow aspect of my existence. So you were kind of shedding your skin, weren't you?
Yeah, that's a really good way of describing it, Dan. I think I was, yeah. I think it was definitely a coming of age. It was definitely 4 weeks, 5 weeks of self-realization and facing the music and, you know, staring. It was like, you know, I was walking along Camino and there was just mirrors all around me, because all I saw was myself and what I needed to do to move on and progress in my life. And that was one of the reasons I walked the Camino, because I had some career conundrums. My love life was in a mess and I needed to have some headspace and remove from that. And so that, you know, that's definitely the case then.
Yeah. And by the time you had arrived in Laroño, you were making observations like, the richest man is he who needs the least to be happy. And you said, I feel like a billionaire. So, I mean, that's quite an extraordinary observation for somebody so early into the journey. What was that like, that feeling? Do you remember?
Yeah, I mean, that was in Vienna, which is just before Logroño. And I think I say in the book that all you're looking for is when you've been walking for 20 kilometers throughout the morning, and, you know, the heat's beating down on you, the sun's coming, it's so hot, the ground's burning through your boots and burning the skin on your feet, and you think, I just need to take a break. And then you see shade, you see trees, you see grass, and you see a water fountain. You're like, that is all I need to be happy. And then you go and you just plonk your backpack down and you lay underneath a tree and you drink your sandwiches that you made the night before, and you're having some cold water. I mean, normally you might want, I don't know, like a beer to be happy or a fizzy drink. But because you've been walking so far and you've been depriving yourself of all these luxuries and indulgences, and all of a sudden a cold water just makes you feel like the king of the road. And it's that sensation of the Camino continually that you get. And, yeah, I think it's just by removing those indulgences and luxuries that everything just, the effects of normal everyday things you might turn your nose up at, all of a sudden is amplified and everything's just got a new significance and a new meaning. And I love that about the Camino.
Yeah, and going back a step, when we talked before about the mobile phone, indeed, you said that you made a note to incorporate a period of digital detox into your post-Camino life. How are you going with that?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I mean, I've become actually very, very good at it. I mean, when I wake up in the morning, I don't turn my phone on for the first hour. That's for sure. When I'm walking the dog, again, the phone goes away from me. Just taking a break from it, and at least half hour before going to bed, I also turn it off as well. I mean, that doesn't sound like a lot, but I think I do mention in the book that recent studies have shown that we look at our phones 150 times a day.
Yeah.
I mean, it's shocking. It's absolutely shocking when you think about it. So just incorporating those moments of digital detox and digital disconnection, it is renewing, it does re-energize you. And I just feel some kind of relief when I don't have my phone with me. And for example, if I'm going out to dinner with Rachel, my lovely lady, I say to Rachel, put my phone in your handbag, put it on airplane mode, I don't want to be disturbed, I don't want it. So it's just making those, again, small little changes that will have a really positive effect. We're all human, and there are times where the phone will get the better of us, but I do really feel like I'm in a daily battle with my phone. My battle saying, look at me, my phone saying, look at me, and I'm thinking, no, leave me alone. So I do make sure a lot of the time during the day is out of sight and out of mind.
You write in the book that the devices have reduced the human attention span to 8 seconds. I mean, mm-hmm. That really is frightening.
I had this kind of debate with people. It's a really, really interesting thing, you know, because most pilgrims will be able to identify with this stuff. There's an issue of weight when we walk, obviously. The less we carry on our back, the freer we are and the easier our passage is. And I wrote on a blog, a Camino kit list, that we should, it's up, obviously this is all optional, it's just my own personal choice, that I would carry a digital camera with me and a dictaphone. Obviously the camera to take pictures and a dictaphone just to record my thoughts and anything I want to document along the way. And I did get a kind of, I would say, on some Camino forums by some fellow pilgrims saying, oh, that's a problem with weight. I understand their point, but to me, the benefits of not carrying my mobile phone in my pocket and having it in the bottom of my bag outweigh the benefits of having my mobile phone with me, because obviously it's just that clearer state of mind. And I don't mind having a little bit, the extra weight, whichever that might be, of like, I don't know, 20 grams or something of a mobile phone and a dictaphone over the mobile, you know. So I would recommend, to get the most out of your Camino, definitely to turn off your phone, put it in the bottom of your bag. But then again, it is personal choice. It's optional.
Yeah, walking the Meseta, you found the going tough, and to keep your cool, you remembered a mindfulness mantra that you learned doing yoga. And it says, where attention goes, energy flows. I think that's a lesson we could learn in a wider sense, couldn't we, Brad?
Most definitely, especially if you, obviously, anywhere in life, it's, what we pay our attention to can, again, like we say, take up a lot of our time and energy. And I think that's been a really useful lesson, especially mentally, that you can take ownership of your thoughts. And if you do realize you're on a negative train of thought, then you consciously switch that, and you make sure, even if you're not feeling it, that you say something positive to yourself. Like, for example, it's not really related to, well, it can be related to the Camino, actually, yeah. Because when I was trudging along, I can't remember where the road was, but there's a road between, that I think it's towards the end of the Meseta, Hospital de Orbigo, and you're essentially walking between a motorway, an autopista, and some fertilized farmland. And the, you know, you got the chemicals of the farmland next to you, you got the traffic and exhaust fumes, and you're starting to, I don't know, trip over your feet because you're tired. And I remember saying to myself, stronger, powerful, with each step to keep going. And even though you're feeling tired, you're putting your attention on being stronger and powerful. Your energy flows into that. So it's like just like a mind game, but a positive mind game. So, yeah, it's definitely a trick of the trade, Dan.
Yeah. Yeah, and some days you really pushed yourself hard. It dawned on you that by the time you'd reached Grañón, you decided that you needed to do a little less walking and a little more growing. Just talk us through that.
Yeah, exactly. So I think I was getting lost in the physical aspect of it more than the spiritual aspect, the personal growth aspect. So I wanted to make sure that I had enough time to record my thoughts, I had lots of melodies kind of, you know, going over in my head, you know, to the beat of my boots on the ground. And I wanted to get all those down as well, because when you're in that Camino consciousness, you know, like I said before, your vibration of energy is so high. Your clarity of thought is so clear. And you want to record that. You want to bottle that. And you want to keep it forever and drink from it whenever you're to remember those moments, to get that energy level high again. And I think that's what, at that point, I felt like I needed to do. I was walking a lot. I was going from 20K to 25 to 30 to 35, because I always like to push myself. And I thought to myself, this is not what it's all about. It's not about trying to beat how many kilometers you did yesterday. It's about growing personally as well, and getting to know yourself better. And in the end, I actually did know myself better through pushing myself physically. But at that point in my journey, I was really needing to get down what was going through my head and all my dictaphone commentaries and journal entries. And a lot of people were socializing a lot more than I was. And I'm actually a very social person, but because I was so tired at the end of every day, I only had enough energy really to cook my food in the communal kitchen of the albergue and just slump onto my bed and fall asleep.
Yeah. You met a Frenchman walking the Camino in bare feet.
I did, yeah. Yeah, Barefoot Bernard. Yeah, interesting guy. Absolutely. I mean, the reason he was walking the Camino barefoot was because he wanted the energy of the earth. And he's contacting with the energy of the earth. And, you know, the supposedly ley lines, which, you know, can't be confirmed or denied, but, you know, these spiritual centers, these high energy, we can call them wires going underneath the ground, you know, and they say that they cause an explosion of emotion and spiritual energy. And I think this guy was plugged in, definitely.
Tell us about learning that your Mayan sign was Cosmic Warrior. And that's the first part of the question. The second part of the question was, how does the title sit with you now?
To be honest with you, I think I write in the book, and I mean, to many, it would seem like kind of some mystical mishmash, but, you know, it was this guy, Barefoot Bernard, that he sat me down. We were at the Outlberg in Burgos, and I was with two other lovely pilgrims, Irish Peter, American Sierra, amazing guys. I called them the Fantastic Three. And they were inseparable the whole Camino. And I really, really loved these guys. So we sat down in outside the albergue in Burgos. The trees are hissing and swaying all around us. Saturday evening, and he sits across the table from me, looks me in the eye, and he says to me, I'm going to tell you your Mayan star sign, which is kind of like, I don't know, the Mayan equivalent of the Gregorian calendar. Star sign. So I'm a Sagittarius, and this is the Mayan equivalent, and I'm the Cosmic Warrior. And I can't remember exactly what he told me I was. It was I had to question free will without intelligence. If I have the book in front of me, I can tell you what it was, but that's what it was. And it was very interesting to listen to, very captivating, just like your intro. And so I am the Cosmic Warrior, basically, according to Mayan astrology. So you can make of that what you will.
And you can learn a little bit more about yourself in times to come. Oh, well, what does the Cosmic Warrior make of all of this?
Exactly. and my fellow pilgrim, Irish Peter, was he was the planetary magician. That was his sign. He was the planetary magician.
I like that, the planetary magician.
Maybe you can put an extra ring around Saturn or something. I don't know, but yeah.
In Burgos, it dawned on you that surpassing self-imposed physical and mental limits had convinced you, you could now achieve anything you put your mind to, and how the generosity you'd been blessed with on the Camino made you believe more than ever in the kindness of the human spirit. Why?
I'll answer the second question first. I think I just bestowed with so much generosity by people along the way. I think I do mention that in the book that I could see how people, certain pilgrims, decide to try to authenticate their journey by walking penniless. And I could see how that was possible because I was just given food and so many points along the way by people I'd never met before. And it wasn't like I was even asking for it, looking for it. They're just like, for example, in Burgos, there was a party of locals and they just came and donated this giant pan of paella to the outburg for pilgrims. And everyone just obviously, you know, like I said in the book, offering free food to a pilgrim is like offering vampire blood, virgin's blood to a vampire. So everyone just tucked in and went for it, you know. So, you know, I lost my face in that. So, absolutely, you know, and that generosity that people bestow upon you along the way, that's why really. And you get talking to people and the pilgrims you meet, they just bear their secrets or their questions or what they're searching for. A lot of people bear them to you within the first hour of knowing them. You're walking through a forest over a carpet of pine needles and they tell you their innermost secrets. And I think that connection makes you feel that human spirit.
You met a shepherd, a real shepherd. It was early in the morning, yeah. And you said in the book, just knowing he was out with me in that desolate, secluded work made me feel safer. Why did you feel so vulnerable that morning?
I think, you know, fear is based on the unknown, isn't it? And when that was my first morning in the Meseta, and it's quite daunting for anybody, the Meseta, to go out and walk I think it stretches out for 200 odd kilometres, doesn't it, between Burgos and León. And that's daunting for anybody. So when I was taking my first steps, everyone's talking about it, aren't they? They're like, oh no, the Meseta's coming up, it's 5 days, it's just flat terrain, the sun's going to be beating down on you, there's no shade, you know, food and water's going to be sparse, you're not going to find many shops to buy your food, so you've got to make sure you stock up, and all of this stuff, it fills you with a little bit of dread. So yeah, and then knowing that this guy here, this shepherd, he knows the land, he can, you know, he survived out here for years, if he can do it, I can do it. And I just remember exchanging a buenos dias with him at early doors that morning. His sheep were bleating and the dog was barking, and it was a poignant moment, and it really filled me with those, you know, those tingles, those goosebumps, that shiver up your spine moment.
In Relegos, which I have found twice to be a town with a very weird energy, you wrote, I stop feeling sorry for myself and think more clearly. I contemplate that, just like life, the Camino is about being thankful for all that you have and learning something from the great people you meet along the way. It's about remaining positive, looking forward to what lies ahead, and believing your best days are yet to come. It's about wearing on your sleeve the Camino motto, Altrea, move forward with courage. It's easier to feel like that on the Camino than in day-to-day life. Actually, living and breathing it 24/7, 365 days a year is kind of a challenge. So let me ask you this. How do you keep yourself mindfully fit now?
That's a really good question. Fitness is a big thing for me. I like to be active. I've got a very dodgy knee at the moment because I was busted it in the gym. So I'm not able to do any running. So I'm just doing a bit of swimming, lots of weights, a bit of surfing, because where I live in Tenerife, it's called the Hawaii of Europe. But relating to the Camino and the lessons that I learned from the Camino, I think I'm going to go back to a previous question. That is definitely keeping my mobile phone, being in charge of my mobile usage, daily meditation. I do some breathing exercises daily. Something called HRV, biofeedback, biofeedback. And it's where you breathe in for 4 seconds, you hold your breath for 1 second, then breathe out for 6 seconds. And that, when in that pause between breath, that sends some calming influence through your body, and it's calming influence on the mind. So exercises like that on a daily basis, and I think my personal development guru is a guy called Zig Ziglar. He's passed away now. But
yeah.
If you've never heard of Zig, or never look him up, I mean, the guy, he's just a genius. And, you know, he says, you know, motivation and personal development is you need to wash yourself with it every day, like wash your mind with it every day, just like you wash your body. So stuff like that, self-talk, affirmations, I dip into all of them on different days, depending on how I feel. Because I'm a person, actually, that I am a very I'm a nervous, anxious person with this, and I can know myself better now, and I employ these tactics and techniques to make sure I keep a hold of that, and I'm on top of it. Because if you are complacent, it can get on top of you. So, yeah, it says, the quote is, stay ready so you don't have to get ready. So exercises like that. And, again, dipping back into the Camino, shall we say, manual for life, because you do get a toolbox for life on the Camino. I go for a walk a lot, Dan. I like walking. I'll just go and walk for an hour, even if it's just up the hill. I'll just go and walk up the hill and walk back. And, you know, anything that's on your mind, all of a sudden, can any questions, you get answers to them.
Tell us about walking at midnight.
Yeah. Talking of anxiety. that was fun up to a point. I was in Leon, and I've met a Danish guy, and I was walking the Camino. I thought, right, well, I've walked in the morning when the sun is obviously not at its strongest, but, you know, I've walked in the afternoon when the sun's at its zenith. But I haven't walked at night, and it was on my mind list. You know, I want to walk at night. I want to see what that's like. So in Leon, I met a Danish guy called Tor, fantastic guy, brilliant lad. And, you know, we got chatting, and I said, do you want to walk at night with me? He said, yep, let's do it. And he wanted to have some sleep first. So he said, we're going to sleep, and then we're going to leave the albergue at 3 a.m. So we'll have about 3 or 4 hours of walking in the darkness. Anyway, we realized that there was a noble night silence, that they closed the doors for the albergue, which is a monastery. So I said to Tor, let's just go before they close the doors. And he said he couldn't do it because he needed to get some sleep. You know, that's a very, very sensible thing to say, and I probably should have done the same.
Exactly.
But I should have followed suit. But I had the big idea that I was going to do this no matter what. So I quickly packed my bags, bolted through the door of the albergue at 9:27, 3 minutes before they closed. And it was interesting because I had a night to actually observe and absorb Spanish culture, and it was nice to see. I think this is when I fell in love with Spain as well, just how people go for a stroll at night time. They're all dressed to impress, and it's just such a lovely social atmosphere. You know, there's a electric vibe in the air, and I saw the city and you know, people sat at the cafes on the terraces, and that was my first impression of the Spanish night. And then I was thinking, I was a bit scared to venture into the countryside, that's beyond Leon. And then I remembered a line from Jack Kerouac's book, you know, outside the glittering city is the West. I had to go. And so I replaced my flip-flops with my boots and got walking. And, yeah, that I was walking alongside the motorway as well. And, yeah, I like I said, I'm quite an anxious person, actually. And I had all these different stories that someone's going to pull over and murder me and do all, you know, running through my head. I walked underneath subways that were, you know, that weren't lit. And in the end, I just collapsed in a church tower. About, I'd say it was maybe 11, 12 kilometres, something like that, beyond Leon, and slept till the daybreak, yeah.
As you neared Santiago, you wrote, I couldn't bear the fact that this adventure was coming to an end, and I was having too good a time to think about how to change my life for the better when I got home. So, Brad, was there a sense of panic in a way that you didn't want to waste this opportunity?
I think it's hard to go back, isn't it, to civilian life when you've been living like a pilgrim. It's frightening. It's frightening because you become addicted to that energy. You become addicted to the lifestyle. And I think I do write in my final chapter that when I got home, I couldn't bear it. I hated being home. I struggled. I didn't like my job. It's going to sound cheesy and cliche again, but I wasn't the same person that left for the Camino when I came back. I had evolved, and all of a sudden that lifestyle wasn't a fit for me anymore. But trying to find the life that was a suit for that new approach to life was really hard. The Camino was the highest point of my life, without a doubt. I was free from mental self-harm. I felt indestructible. And when I came home, that drained away and it drained out of me. And it was tough. It was really, really tough finding my feet again.
And it clearly has had a massive impact on you, not least of which the fact that you've written this very, very good book. But you've also been back 3 times, haven't you?
Yeah, I've had to. I couldn't. Well, I went back the following year because I just had to go back and connect with that energy again. And I've been and done the Camino Portugués as well. And I've done that with my lovely lady, Rachel, as well, which has been fantastic because she, seeing my book and writing about it, she's like, wow, I'd really love to do it. And, for anyone who's not done the Camino Portugués, I'd really recommend it. It's so different to the Camino Francés, but it's amazing. It is amazing. Portuguese people are so hospitable. They're so humble and they're so intelligent. They're just lovely.
You know, a young Irish pilgrim that you met had been told to walk by his parish priest, and the pastor said to him, "The Camino is a crash course of life lessons in a month. It teaches you how to deal with anything life can throw at you." And I think that's a very good explanation of our collective journeys, isn't it?
It is, most definitely. Like I said, because all the things we've talked about, all the lessons of the road, you can apply them to your daily life. I mean, there's the fitness lessons of just going for a walk, and clearing your mind, getting some headspace. There's so many lessons along the Camino. I think, the lesson I mentioned before about removing indulgences and luxuries and then things you'd normally turn your nose up at becoming something, something wondrous. And there's so many lessons along the way. I think I mentioned in Burgos, when I'm writing in an email, kind of all my reflections of the road so far. And I say about how comfort had become my enemy as well. That was another lesson I learned, that comfort can be an enemy. Partners in crime with sloth and procrastination. And, just knowing that about yourself and about life is being careful not to allow yourself to get attached to those luxuries as well, and having some time where you might not allow yourself those luxuries, one, to maybe get something done, and two, to appreciate them more as well.
Yeah, great answer. A woman you met in St. Jean-Pied-de-Port said, "Every now and then you have to frighten yourself to feel alive."
Yeah, definitely.
Going back, and I said now you've walked 4 Caminos, going back and looking back now, is there less fear?
I think what she meant by that was, you step outside your comfort zone. Mm. And there's definitely a conscious decision that I make probably more often than I need to step outside of my own comfort zone. And the Camino is definitely something outside of everybody's comfort zone. Let's be honest, the Albergs aren't comfortable. they're anything but.
That's right.
And there was many times when I preferred to sleep rough than sleeping at Camino, if I'm being honest with you. Sleeping in Alberg, sorry. Mm. But that's not to say I don't appreciate the Alberg, but sometimes you're like, oh, there's 50 people snoring, or I could spend the night listening to the crickets, you know, clicking their way through the night. So, and, you know, the beds aren't comfortable, but that's all part of the journey. That, like I said, that makes you appreciate your own bed when you go home, in your own bedroom. So, yeah, I think she means just step outside your comfort zone, really. And there's definitely, again, that's another lesson of the Camino.
There's a great line in the book, every saint has a past and every sinner has a future. I love that. Because there's a little bit of that in all of us, isn't there?
Most definitely, yeah. We've all done things we probably wouldn't do again in the future. But I think that the whole point of that line is acceptance, to accept everybody and accept yourself most importantly.
You say that the Camino made you stronger, wiser, more confident, indestructible, free from all worry and the psychological self-harm consuming you. Have you healed?
Yes, I think there's no doubt about that. I think I'm a person that battles. I have psychological battles, and I know them. I know my psychological nemesis. I know who they are, I know what they are. And the Camino definitely gives you some tools to go to war with them. There's no doubt about that. So I am definitely in a better place than I ever have been. And without doubt, a lot of that is thanks to the Camino experiences and lessons and insights and revelations.
You and I are kindred spirits. We're both working musicians, and you were working last night.
That's hence the croaky voice.
Yeah. So just before we finish, what song did you finish with last night?
Oh, if I tell you that, people aren't going to like me anymore.
Go on. What did you finish with?
Oh, okay. Sweet Caroline.
I love it. Ba, 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 ba. Well, why not? I play it every single gig.
It's a floor filler. You have to.
Every
it's a
gig.
Crime not to.
Now, look. Yeah. Now you and I are definitely kindred spirits. Good luck with the music. Good luck with the book. Good luck with the life, the love, the future. The day will come when I'll sing harmonies for you, maybe. And you can do
that would be great. We should definitely collaborate. Definitely collaborate.
You can do the same for me. Buen Camino, Brad, and congratulations on a wonderful book, a fantastic achievement.
Thank you very much.
And I'll tell my listeners where they can get a copy. They ought to go out and buy it, because not only is it a great personal story, it's also a great story about the Camino as well. And there are lots of insights into different places and different ways to go and all sorts of stuff. It's magic. Congratulations, Brad. Buen Camino.
Thank you very much for having me, Dan. Thanks for reading the book, and I'm really grateful for this opportunity to relive my Camino again. You're an absolute saint. Thank you very much, mate.
My guest this week, Bradley Chermside, and you can buy Brad's book on Amazon, and you can find Brad at bradleychermside.com, bradleychermside.com. And just a reminder, the book is available, as I said, on Amazon. It's called The Only Way is West. It's out now. The subtitle, A Once-in-a-Lifetime Adventure, Walking 500 Miles on Spain's Camino de Santiago. I always have a quote to start and finish, and this week the songwriter and performer Leonard Cohen said, "There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in." Until next week, I'm Dan Mullins. Buen Camino. Walk upon the sea.